I said everything I was going to say. Okay, first of all, I very much want to thank the Schilts. It was actually my idea to have some sort of something in the sukkah. And thank you for, even before I was going to suggest it, you recommended it. So thank you very much. It's a very special, for me, it's very special to be able to give this year. To be honest, it's always been really a dream of mine to be able to give a shiur to speak about the Torah of someone that I say more I knew, because I don't consider myself a Talmud of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He had certainly many Talmidim. I will tell you, though, an anecdote that he said to me once when we were speaking about an inyan, and I said, it's difficult for me, I don't know what I should do. I said, I'm not a Talmud Chacham. And he stopped me in midstream and he said, what do you mean you're not a Talmud Chacham? He says, you're calling me stupid? I said, what? He says, you're a Talmud of mine. You're telling me I'm not a Chacham? I'm a Chacham. So that was the godless of Rav Aaron, and Rav Aaron's Torah is that he had this, first of all, unbelievable sense of humor, but unbelievable sense of making everybody feel a part of him and his Torah. And that, to me, was one of the most unbelievable things, is that, you know, my first experience with Rav Aaron was when I was in YU, I was considering moving shiurim, and Baruch Hashem, I was zocheh to have a great Rebbe, Rav Meir Goldach. What I was not zocheh is that the Rebbe didn't want me to leave shiur. So my father suggested to me, my father was a Talmud of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik as well. He said, how would Rav Goldach be able to say no to you if you went to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's shiur? So I said, okay, I'll try it out. I tried it out the first day. It happened to be very pleasurable. With the doubts, he was giving a shiur on Lashon Hara. I needed to know a little bit about Lashon Hara. And at the end of the shiur, I was shocked. The Rav Aaron shiur wasn't a very large shiur. There was about 8 people in the shiur. After the shiur, he turns to me. This is like the second after he finished the Rav Chaim. And he goes, so, how did I do? And I was shocked. And I said, what? And I was all nervous. And he said, you're testing me. Obviously, you're testing my shiur. How did I do? Did I make the, you know? And then he said to me, he says, Hartstein, your last name is Hartstein, right? I said, yes. He said, Kalman Hartstein's your father. I said, oh, unbelievable. How did you know that? He says, I remember, and he always was very specific. I don't remember how many years it was. 46 years ago, I taught your father. That's the kind of memory Rav Aaron had. And every single week in shiur, and almost every day when I was in the regular shiur, Rav Aaron would ask me, how's your father? How's your father doing? Please send my regards. He always wanted to keep that contact with the Talmud. My father used to go to a shiurim that he gave in the 5 towns every week. Always would say to him, remind your father, I'm giving the shiur at 8 o'clock, not at 8:30. It was unbelievable. Another story just about his sense of humor and how he made you feel comfortable. I was zoicha once to drive Rav Aaron. I wasn't zoicha for Rav Aaron because I wasn't such a great, probably still not a great driver. But I was driving to Brooklyn to Bar Mitzvah. I'd never driven to Brooklyn before. And unfortunately, I didn't have a car. So they called a guy up in Kolo. And this Kolo guy had this tank of a car. And I was so nervous to drive him. And I guess it was clear I was nervous. And Rav Aaron looks at me. I strap him in the car and he says to me, tell me, what is the four boobas? Who is the four boobas? And I said, what? So finally, I could answer a question. Sure, I know this one. So I said, sorry, Rivka. He goes, no. He goes, it was Bubba Basra, Bubba Messiah, Bubba Kama. He goes, and the fourth, Bubba Maisa. And that was for Rav Aaron. That was a very funny joke. And that made me feel the rest of the ride. I felt so comfortable because I was like talking to a friend, Lahabiel. And that's really, you know, I'm not my zechus, as I said, to be called a Talmud or to give a shiur, on one hand, is kind of ridiculous. On the other hand, to just give over even the hanugas of stories about Rav Aaron, I think you'll learn a tremendous amount. With that, I want to certainly give a Dvar Torah that I heard from my Rebbe. It was a popular one that he gave many times. And it's about Sukkot. The Gemara in Sukkot says the famous thing by the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, which we're having a mini one tonight. So it says, Hillel says, Imani kan, hakol kan. The Imani kan, mikan. So he said, Hillel says, if I'm here, everything is here, everybody is here, and if I'm not here, nobody's here. This is a startling statement of Hillel. We know Hillel, Haflerecha Kamocha, this is what he's saying with such a Baal Gaiva. He says, oh, I'm here, everybody, we can start the show now. This is certainly Rav Aaron, Bala Rav Aaron, how can it be? And we know that Simchas Veis HaShoeva, Chazal tell us, Simchas Veis HaShoeva was the penultimate point of Simcha. And if we who are not Zocha to see Simchas Veis HaShoeva B'yomav, you didn't see true Simcha. So what is the statement that Hillel made at the Simchas Veis HaShoeva? Rav Aaron said a key point, obviously, which is repeated, is the word Ani, is the individual. But he says the true key points are the word Kan, if I am here. So he explained, what does it mean, am I here? What is this aspect of Simcha, am I here? Rav Aaron said, that is what an individual needs to be. He needs to be in the society. He needs to be understanding what Kan is, what here is. And that is really a derech of Rav Aaron's salvation, of understanding what the generation was, understanding where we are, and based on that, what needs to be done. And therefore, certain people would ask Rav Aaron questions, and they would get different answers than other people. Now, did that mean that Rav Aaron he didn't know what was going on? Chas v'sholom. For different people in different scenarios, there were different things possible. I remember I asked Shilas, and after I asked the Shila, first of all, there were times where Rav Aaron would not answer a Shila. Unfortunately, many people would call him late at night, and Rav Aaron would say, call me tomorrow morning, I can't give a Shila. Or there were certain times, this was the godless Rav Aaron, where Rav Aaron would say to me, who's your Rav again? And I would tell him who my Rav is, he goes, ask him. Because he knew in that specific shita he was very machmir, and he didn't want to impose that machmir view on his students. Although, if you asked him the truth, he would tell you. So sometimes he would say that. I remember I asked him a shayla, which I knew was something that was definitely us. I had a very difficult situation in business, and it came to a point, unfortunately, where I could have lost my job. I didn't know what to do. And Rav Aaron went through it as the encyclopedic mind that he had, and he paskined it, and it was mutter in the specific circumstance, but it was only for me. It wasn't that I should go tell the story to everybody else and say, Rav Aaron says it's mutter to do this and this. No. It was a specific situation, and that was the godless of understanding what Kan means, of understanding what his Talmidim are, and what they should be, and so on and so forth. The other thing about it says, Hakol. What does it mean, Hakol? So he says, he explained Kan, what Kan means. So for example, if I'm inviting people tonight to the shir, so he says the shir tonight is in the shild sukkah. Right? So we can say it's in the shild sukkah, people will understand. I can give the street number, I can say it's across the street from the shul. That's what Khan is, this is where it is. But if somebody is not from this area, I need to explain to him it's in Bergenfield, I need to explain to him it's in New Jersey, right? And if he's from Israel, it's in the United States. That's what Hakol means. There's no way a person can be an individual without being Khan, without being here. And that's another thing that Rav Aaron believed, is that you can't just be an individual and live in your own world and think, okay, I'm Khan, I'm in my world, I'm in with my people. You need to have Hakol. You need to understand what's going on. And...
Khan.
The rain is Khan. If we get to the... We might move inside. Okay, so first... So, we'll see. If it gets bad, the shear's not over. We're moving inside. So this is what Rav Aaron believed, that Ani, the individual, has to be a woven fabric within the universe, and this is what true simcha is. And he explained that was the true simcha. What was simcha's base of shoeva? Nisach Hamayim. It was Mayim. He pointed out the Sadducees believed it was Yayin. It had to be through Yayin because Yayin ain't simcha of a Yayin. No, he said that was wrong. It was with something as so simple as water. To us to appreciate the simplicity of life. Unfortunately, we don't drink a cup of water and say that bracha with kavana that Rachmana Litzlan, you couldn't have water. Right? There are people who didn't have water. There are people, and my brother-in-law lives in Baltimore, and he explained to me when there was a hurricane a few weeks ago, people had to wait online to get water. I would imagine when you drank that cup of water, you would probably say it with more kavana. That's the simplicity. V'shachtumayim v'sasam. The true, what Hashem wants us to understand is this simple thing. That's what Sameach B'chelko is. That's what true simcha is. Being an individual and realize that everybody has their own role in life. This, I think, was one of the fundamental ideas I learned from my Rebbe. And that was the individuality of every person has their own way and every person has their own thing that they should do with their life. when I was leaving Rav Aaron Shear, which Rav Aaron didn't know and didn't pull from, he said to me, "So what are you doing with your life?" I said, "I'm getting a job, any type of job, 100%. He says, "Well, why don't you go for smicha?" So I said, "It's not for me. I'm not going to be a rabbi. I'm not for me." So Rav Aaron looked at me and he says, "Aha! Because you have already been a rabbi, and you know it's not for you, and you know that smicha is not for you." And I said, "No, Rebbe." He goes, "Do me a favor. Take the first bechin. I will grade it. I will see how you do. If you don't do well, it's okay. You studied for one bechina. Nu." And obviously the rest, I received smicha. And Rav Aaron had no intention to get to be a pulpit rabbi. You have to be... Everybody has their own way. This was Rav Aaron's classic... idea, which I've said many times because it's my most favorite, and he said it many times, Rav Aaron, about the menorah. Just tonight is the Yoshpizin of the Machloikis, but we'll assume for our purposes, tonight's the Yoshpizin of Aaron, Aaron HaKoyin. Rav Aaron obviously was Aaron, he was a HaKoyin, he was a Levi, close. And the menorah that Aaron lit is very significant. Rav Aaron always, it's interesting, Rav Aaron always said his vort by Chanukah, and he would always say it again at Parshas Balosva, because he loved it so much. The Chovos HaLevavos, Sefer he loved as well, in the introduction, gives this following mashal. He says, the menorah has, as we know, the six branches, and as we learn, the six branches were facing towards the Shamash. And the Chovos HaLevavos goes in detail what each of these branches signified. Rav Aaron moves it to modern day times. He said, one of the branches is music, one of them is biology, one of them is whatever you can think of, English, whatever a person does. And the middle, everybody agrees, is the Torah. Whatever you do in your life has to be centered around the Torah. Nobody's saying that you have to sit and learn Torah your whole life. In fact, that is for many people, but it's not for everybody. But when you are in your life, it has to be guided by the Torah. There's no contradiction of terms to think that a person can go out and work and not be involved in Torah. This is a famous word that said many times, but Rav Aaron believed that a person who sits at work for the 8 hours, or Rahman al-Islam, I've heard people have to work 11, 15 hours, and they have to work that long, and they're always taking work, and a question comes up in work, and they say, you know what, that's really a Shiloh Geneva. I'm not talking about opening up a safer during lunch, which would be nice too, and learning. I'm talking about thinking to yourself before, saying, you know what, I'm wearing a yarmulke, Kiddush Hashem, I really shouldn't say that, I shouldn't talk like that. Those, Rahman al-Islam, 15 hours, are as equal to a person sitting in the base medrash and learning. This isn't a chiddush or a var. This is the truth. And that's why he had so many students that went into so many different things. We pointed out a few weeks ago, Hashem Yikom Domo, Dr. Applebaum, who was probably the Talmud Mufal, the Ravaran Salvation. And you look at the stories that's written about him. I didn't know him so well, but he knew these stories. He was someone who was a Frum doctor in Eretz Yisrael, Shari Tzedek Hospital, and changed people's minds who were not affiliated with Judaism. The Israelis who were Chiloni would go to him and they would say, "Oh, see? Dati. Not so bad." Because he learned from his Rebbe. It's impossible to be by Rav Aaron and not learn this Nida of the menorah. Of doing, yes, you can do different things. It has to be centered around Torah. You don't say after you leave davening, "Okay, Hashem, you stay here. I'll be back at 6 o'clock for mincha." We don't believe that. And I think that's this idea of Kiddush Hashem. This was a very important idea: the individuality that each person has. You don't have to be like, you know, they tell a story about someone that goes up to the Shemayim and he's crying and he says, "I'm so sorry, Ribbono Shelolam. I wasn't like the Chafetz Chaim. I wasn't like Rav Moshe Feinstein. I'm so sorry, Rav Yisrael Salant." And he looks at him and he says, "Chaim Yankel, I didn't ask you to be Rav Yisrael Salant. I didn't ask you to be the Chavetz Chaim. I asked you to be Chaim Yankel. Why weren't you Chaim Yankel?" This is what Rav Aaron believed. The world was created with two letters. Olam Hazeh was created with the Hey. And the Olam Haba was created with the Yud. And the Hey is the Hey Ayidiyah, HaShulchan. It signifies this table. It asserts, as we said before, the individuality. On one hand, on the other hand, it is assertiveness, right? We could say shulchani, so that the yud and the hey is assertiveness. This is my shulchan. It's the synthesis in this world. And this is the Shem Hashem, the yud and the hey. This is, we say, the hibaram, The hay is small because on one hand, yes, you should be individual, but you need to assert yourself as well. And the pasuk Rav Aaron would refer to Vayivra Elokim es Hashamayim B'tzalmo B'tzalam Elokim. So the question was, why does it say Hashem created? It says B'tzalmo twice. He says it doesn't say Vayivra Elokim es Adam B'tzalam Elokim B'tzalmo. Rav Aaron interprets the pasuk to mean Hashem created the man, created man in man's own image. What does that mean? He created him to be himself, to be this person. We don't all have to reach the levels of the great Gedolim. We have to reach the levels of our own self. I think this is what Rav Aaron signified. I want to tell you a few stories. I think Rav Aaron's best story was that he would always say that he wanted to be a Laman. All he wanted to do was teach Torah. And we see that through a brief biography of who Rav Aaron was. It's very interesting. When Rav Aaron was born, Rav Aaron was born in 1917 during the Russian Revolution, and he was born at a time exactly when it started, apparently, and there was no doctors around because they were attending to the wounded soldiers. So he was a breech baby, and there was nobody there, and for sure in 1917 I could imagine there was nothing to do for breech babies. Most of them died, and he was delivered a breech baby, and he lived, Baruch Hashem. And he said the following thing in Shir. He said, breech babies are often brain damaged if the mother doesn't undergo a cesarean section. Baruch Hashem, I was not brain damaged, but I am still a breech baby. He said, I still forge my own path, and I don't always keep in line with everybody else. I think this summarizes Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron didn't always keep in the path. He didn't care what people thought. He said it like it was. He spoke out against Vietnam, and he got put out on the blacklist, and he, whatever it was, spoke about Jonathan Pollard when it wasn't popular. He went to visit Rabin. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik had a debilitating stroke in 1983. The left side of his body was 100% paralyzed. Could not move the left side of his body. He went into Eretz Yisrael on Sukkot a number of years ago. It's still in such pain. Because he said to himself, if I don't go and speak to Rabin, what he was doing at that time, I have to. And he, amazingly, at that time, where as we know, religious people in Rabin's eyes were not looked at so well, he visited Rabin. He had a meeting with him. He said that Yitzhak Rabin had tremendous covered for him. And he said the following thing. He says, Chag HaSukkos now. This is the time where you can be Koyna Oylem B'Shat Achas. Says Prime Minister Rabin, he always had the utmost respect for people. Prime Minister, you have a chance now. You have these Oslo Accords. They don't make any sense. You have the chance to just do away with this Oslo Accord. You could be Koylam Haba B'Shatacha. And Mr. Prime Minister, if you don't follow, a person can also, unfortunately, be Kona, not the Oylam Haba B'Shatacha. Have a good Yom Tov. And Rav Aaron left. What, do you think he was going to make a difference? Do you think Rabin cared? No, it wasn't that. He needed to go. He was a breech baby. He needed to know that he did something. He tried. That was Rav Aaron. And when Rav Aaron was 12 years old, his father, Rav Moshe, the famous Rav Moshe, went to YU. And in YU, he was of the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Aaron was left over. He needed a melamed. He had a melamed at that time who wasn't so famous. His name was Rav Yitzchak Hutner, the famous Rosh Yeshiva. And he taught Rav Aaron. They were very close. And Rav Moshe sent a letter saying, it's going to be his bar mitzvah soon. Don't bar mitzvah him. Wait till he comes to America. Rav Yitzchak Hutner said, no, nothing doing. We said last week what happened, that Rav Aaron was taught by one of his uncles, who was a Feinstein, to put tefillin on a Chol Moed. He put tefillin on by his bar mitzvah on a Chol Moed. No. So Rav Moshe came, and when he came to America, he explained to him everything. When he came to the United States, he didn't know English. So they needed to have someone who taught him English, and there was a bacher in Yeshivas, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Achanan in YU. You might know him. His name was Rabbi Avigdor Miller. And Rabbi Avigdor Miller taught Rav Aaron English. He later went on to teach, to be the Mashgiach Ruchani in Chaim Berlin, where Rav Aaron moved to. Rav Aaron received smicha from his father, Rav Moshe. He also received smicha from Rav Moshe Feinstein. and he never told anyone about this. It wasn't until he was Nifter that he told that one of his grandsons read the smicha that he received from Moshe. There were times when smicha was giving out. Rav Aaron was knowing to do this as well. Each person got an individual smicha. A friend of mine in Shir said that his smicha is different than anybody else's. He was always known as the firmer guy in Shir with this guy. And the smicha language said, "V'chol kihilo sakodesh," you should be able to give raven. So this guy, my friend, it says "V'chol kihilo sacharedius," that he could give him even the charedi one. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote in the smicha of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik that he declared that Rav Aaron should be considered one of the gedolei hador. This was a time when there was a Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Aaron Cutler was still alive. Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Rav Moshe Feinstein called him a gadol hador. Rav Aaron knew, as we explained before, that unfortunately maybe Rabbanus wouldn't always work out. He knew that he had to get a parnasa. And from all parnasas he decided to get, he went to NYU Law School. The story is told that he took he never studied and so on and so forth. There's many great stories about law school. And that, whether it's true or not, I don't know. Rav Aaron didn't say this himself, but Talmud says that he finished number two when he took the bar. He was number two in the history of the bar exam. He was number two to finish. So, of course, like any typical brisker, the Talmud answered, said, two? How come he wasn't number one? What happened? You know, but number two. And Rav Aaron always told the story that one time when he was in class, he was reading a story about the witnesses, right? You know what I'm talking about. Starts with a J. Let's call him the Kohova witness. So Rav Aaron held, you can't say the word with a J, because it's a Shem Hashem. So he had to read it. So he said he read it with a K the whole time, consistently. And the Kohova witnesses, there's a case with the Kohova witnesses. And the professor goes, "What is wrong with you? They're not called the Kohova witnesses." He's like, "I'm very sorry. I have a speech impediment. My J's are K's." And he said when he finished the thing, he had to look any time it said J and K. He had to switch it. He wanted to be continued to do Chil Hashem. But he said, "I couldn't say the word." That was Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron was married at the age of 31 to his wife, who he loved so much, his Eishes Chayil, who was at his beck and call, Rebbetzin Ella Shurin. And Rav Aaron got married pretty late in his life. And Rav Aaron's wife was much younger than him. And I once asked Rav Aaron, when I was young and stupid, I wasn't married. Rav Aaron kept always just nudging me. No, what's going on? You're going out? So I said, "Rebbe, you got married at 31 years old, no?" So he popped on the thing. He goes, "I got married at 31. He goes, "What did you want me to do? Marry a 10-year-old? His wife was 18 years old when he married her. So he had to wait a little bit. And Rav Aaron, there was such an ahava. So many years they were married. It was really, truly unbelievable what I saw in that marriage. Every right after Myruv, he would ask someone to call his wife, and it would biggest joy. He would get on the phone, and he would say, "Ella, I just gave shir for 1 hour and 12 minutes, and there were 10 people there, and I gave all the Rav Chaim, and it gave him so much joy." Not he didn't call on the phone, you know. Another big Talmud Chacham. He called his wife. That's what he such joy. He always would speak about it. "Oh, yes, oh, my wife." He loved her so much. And Nebuch, that's really one of the reasons I believe Rav Aaron died of a broken heart. His wife died a month before him. And after that, Rav Aaron said, half of my soul was ripped away from me. You couldn't live. That Sukkos, the first days of Sukkos, his children say, he was, Baruch Hashem, I was zeicha to be able to see him a few weeks before that, and when he gave shir, and this is someone who loved Torah so much, he just couldn't give shir. It was so difficult for him because he loved his wife so much. And this was the same Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, as I told you before, had this debilitating stroke in 1983. He came to YU every week. He traveled back to Chicago every week. He went to the five towns every week to give a shir. Most, I don't know any Rosh Hashiva that does this. Somebody who has a debilitating stroke. So one year, Rav Aaron was getting much weaker. He stopped walking. He was in a wheelchair. The shir decided we're going to approach him and say, "You don't have to give shir anymore." So we went to him and we said, "Rav Aaron, we think it's time. You shouldn't give shir anymore." And he looked at us, probably the angriest he ever gotten. And he clapped again and he said, "Do you want me to die? Is that what you want? Do you want me to die?" He said, "If I can't be a malamid, if I can't teach, I'm going to die." That's what he believed. If he can't come to YU, that's the end of his life. If he can't teach Torah in different places, this was Rav Aaron. Moving on in his life, 1948 to 1959, he was a Magachir in Yeshiva Sof Chaim Berlin. He taught before that in Masechta Sferos Yerushalayim. And they had great admiration for him. He's one of his Talmidim, by the way, was the Novominsk Rebbe there. And the Mashkiach, as I told you, was Rav Igna Miller. My father tells me the story. There's a famous thing about Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron was always engrossed in his learning, that he would never come to Shir on time. Why? He would take the train, he was living in YU, he would take the train from YU to Chaim Berlin, and inevitably he would miss a stop by 4, 5, 6, 7, sometimes 10 stops, and would end up somewhere, who knows where, and we'd get out and he wouldn't know what was going on. And he would have to get back on. And so Rav Igna Miller used to send a bucher to pick him up to go with him. So the bucher went up to him once, the 45-minute trip, and he said, Rebbe, we're ready to leave. And he says, no. He goes, the Rashba is still very schwer. I didn't clear the Rashba. I can't. He said the Rav Aaron used to walk, my father used to say. He used to have one foot in the sidewalk and one foot in the street. Because he wasn't paying attention. He was always involved in Torah. He was always thinking. We said Rav Aaron was an extremely compassionate person. He would always give money to people on the streets. There's famous stories about him seeing people who were nebuch in bad situations. He once found a little child in the street who was crying, couldn't find their mother. He took him back to the house. The mother wasn't there. He waited literally hours until the mother came home. This was a Rosh Yeshiva. His father, Nebuch, there was in one of the Yiddish papers, they wrote something very unappetizing about his father. And he went to Washington Heights to every single newsstand, and he bought every single paper so that maybe his father wouldn't see what they wrote about him. Rav Aaron used to tell me, we discussed about saying Havdalah over the phone. So he said, it's not the best thing to do, but I, for many years, made Havdalah over the phone. Why? He says there was a woman in Washington Heights who, Nebuch, her husband died. She wouldn't make Havdalah for herself. She didn't feel comfortable coming to Rav Aaron's apartment. He would call her. Moshe Shabbos, after he would call, as made a Havdalah, before we make Havdalah, we have to call this woman on the phone every week, let's not forget. It was important that one person was very important to him. In 1959, the Yeshiva University was zeicha that he took over his brother's shir for a short time, and he was known for these hashkafa shirim. This was one of the most popular things of Rav Aaron. He gave a great shir, but the hashkafa shir is on Thursday. No holds bar, we said before. But this was like, in the time where things were, with you know, my years, when I was there, so Clinton was in power, and Nebuch, all these stories were going on. Rav Aaron would not hold back. And he would talk about Clinton and Janet Reno and this and that, and he would go back and forth, always with Torah points. And he would always be so concerned about Eretz Yisrael. So concerned. When I was in Shir, so the year after I graduated YU, so I was working for the Ministry of Defense of Israel. So unfortunately, Rav Aaron thought I had like some nice position there. So Rav Aaron used to always say to me, Sanu, tell me, what's going on? What's going on? Like, I knew something. So, again, me being not the smartest, I always would say, well, but I finally got in a lot of trouble. Because he said to me, I hear that Prime Minister Netanyahu is coming in. Please set up a meeting for me. So I was in a lot of trouble. Because now I had to show that a position. So I went to my boss, who was from, I said to him, you know, Harav Makir, Harav Aaron said, oh, of course, we know, yep. So he said, you got to help me out here. I don't want to look bad. He said, are you crazy? He's coming in for 2 days. He's going to be in Washington. You think he's going to meet with Aaron Salvation? He goes, please, can you get a message somewhere? They got a message to Benjamin Netanyahu. 2 days in Washington. Turns out to be 1 day. He calls back. I get called to the office of the head of the Ministry of Defense. He says, he'll have a meeting with Aaron Salvation. I was shocked. I called Baruch Hashem, who was in Washington, so it was very difficult for Rav Aaron to travel there. Then I had to set up all the arrangements. People knew where Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was. He cared about Eretz Yisrael. As we said, that when Rav Aaron suffered the stroke, nothing stopped him. He had a yeshiva, as we know, the Brisker Yeshiva in Chicago, and he would go back and forth every week. And it was just really, really amazing to see. One of the stories, as I told before, between Mincha Ma'ariv once, not the today, was the story by Rav Aaron in the Tzitzis story, which I love so much, because, again, it shows my adolescence, but it shows something great about Rav Aaron. Rav Aryeh added Shita, the Shita's Baal Maor. Shita's Baal Maor says that Techelus and Tzitzis is Ma'akev the Tzitzis, meaning that B'tzareinu, we don't have Techelus, or some think we do have Techelus today. Rav Aryeh held that even if we did, the Mesoru was lost. So let's assume we have no Techelus today. And if you have no Techelus today, Tzitzis must be worn with Techelus. And if not, you certainly can wear them, but you're not Yotzei, you're Mitzvah Min HaTorah Techelus. Meaning what? When it comes to Shabbos, and if you don't have an Eruv, you can't wear Tzitzis, because the strings are considered carrying. So Shitas Baal Maor, hardly anybody holds like this. Rav Aryeh felt that this was the Shita. Rav Aryeh never held from Eruv in general. This was a problem when by my wedding. So Rav Aryeh used to be makpid that the person who used to, the Eidim, had to be people who held from Yashan. Rav Aryeh introduced, by the way, the idea of Yashan in the United States of America. It was Rav Aryeh's salvation, everybody admits it, and that's why it's become so popular. And there's a story in Chicago about a rav of a very big shul in Chicago who was called up to the podium to be an aide. And Rav Aryeh, you know, didn't know too much about microphones. And in front of everybody, he says, Rabbi so-and-so, he says, Rabbi, do you hold from Yashan? He says, no, I'm not on that level yet, Rabbi. He goes, okay, make a shvua right now for the rest of your life. Then you can be an aide if you hold from it. And this rav tells the story. He made the shvua, and now he's got no choice. And he held from it. So in my wedding, he said that the Eidim had to be ones who don't hold from Eruv. This is very difficult. So my chavrusa at that time didn't hold from Eruv, and I found somebody else. Just to tell you the story about the wedding, it's another fascinating story. It was actually in the Jerusalem Post. They wrote the story when Rav Aryeh was 80, and I didn't think it was anything to do with me. And afterwards I found out it was a story about my wedding. Rav Aryeh Soloveitchik was not the Masada Kedushin of my wedding. Rav Aryeh Soloveitchik, I was married on a Sunday. So I knew it would be very difficult for Rav Aryeh to come in on Tuesdays. So I didn't even think about it. I got a call from the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin said, the Rebbe's coming to your wedding. He wants to know where the invitation is. I said, Rebbetzin, I didn't want to send the invitation. She goes, you can't fool him. He knows you're getting married. He wants to come. I can't do anything about it. He's coming. No. We made all the arrangements. I was very careful. I had his grandson pick him up. I had the backup guy who was going to take the grandson, make sure he went. Fine. The backup guy comes, my friend, and he says, we have to pick up Rav Aryeh. His flight's landing whatever time. He says, I know the way it is. Nebuch, Rav Aryeh's the last person let off because of his disability. He says, so when it lands, half hour. Okay. The flight landed a half hour early. Rav Aryeh got off. Nobody was there. So he took a cab. Got in the cab. He said, take me to Staten Island. Take him to Staten Island. The guy gets over the bridge. He says, where do you want to go to Staten Island? He says, I want to go to the Kosher Catering Hall in Staten Island. The guy looks at him and goes, there are no Jews in Staten Island. There's no Kosher Catering Hall. He thought Rav Aryeh was, something was wrong with him. He pulls over. He calls the police. Police come, tells them, says, listen, we have a problem here. We got this crazy guy, and he's telling me he's Staten Island, Jewish, whatever. So the policeman says, what's your name? So, of course, he never said, would say, Rabbi. He goes, Aaron Sol. He goes, Aaron? He says, who is the president of the United States? He says, I will not tell you the president of the United States. I will tell you all the presidents. Went through all the presidents of the United States. Got a mouthful. So they took him back to YU. And that was the story. I when it came out, so he was in the right place. No, so what happened was the guys came, they go, yeah, this is the worst thing. About 30 seconds before I was walking down the aisle, they say to me, we don't know where he is. Where's Rav Aryeh? Is he here? I go, no, he's not here, but thank you very much, and I have to walk down my aisle. And they said, you want us to go get him? He's probably in white. No, do me a favor. Cause enough trouble. And, again, so back to the Tzitzit story. So the
Tzitzit. Did he make it to the wedding?
No, I didn't want him to. He wanted to come for the dancing. I said, please, Rebbe, I got to call him. It's an interesting wedding I had. Calling your Rebbe, then apologizing. Afterwards, calling his wife and apologizing. Anyway, so the tzitzis story. So Rav Aryeh held that you can't wear tzitzis because you didn't hold from Eruv. So on Shabbos, you didn't wear tzitzis. The Das Yochin. But here's the little caveat. If Rav Aryeh didn't hold from Eruv, he couldn't go to shul because he didn't allow a wheelchair. He couldn't walk. He could only use a cane. So he wasn't going to shul. So what did he have to wear? He couldn't wear tzitzis. He was in his house. They said, Rebbe, I don't understand. This was the stupidity of Rabbi Daniel Hartzi. I said, Rebbe can't walk. How is he going to go to shul anyway? What's the thing? says, what are you talking about? How do you know that on Shabbos morning I won't wake up and be 100% cured from my illness and wake up, put my tzitzis on, and walk outside? How do you know? 80-year-old person saying this. This was such musr. And he wasn't joking with me. He believed that. He believed that he was going to wake up one morning, and when Rav Aaron used to come to shir, Rav Aaron would walk from here to the end of the sukkah. It would take him almost 20 minutes to walk that length. Every step, he would say, oy vey, oy vey. It would be heart-wrenching. And he would sometimes sing when he would go. He would pretend he was a kohen gadol and go, achas v'achas, achas v'shtayim. And he did that many times until he got to the seat. And whatever was bothering you that day, when you saw Rav Aaron walking to shir, he said, I'm such an idiot. Well, I can't believe it. This is bothering me. And then you would always inevitably think to yourself, oh, this is going to be a bad shir today. And Rav Aaron would sit down, and you would think he was 40 years old. You didn't hear one oy. Torah was the Torah from when he taught, when he didn't have the stroke. That was what was amazing about Rav Aaron. The Torah was really gave him chiyuv. It gave him life. Perhaps one of the best stories was told that one of the Hespedim, that was for Rav Aaron, by his grandson. And again, it shows you this, Rav Aaron believes in Kiddush Hashem. Somebody came in during the Shiva to his sons. They said, I have to tell you a very embarrassing story, but I'm going to say to you it anyway because it shows what your father was. I was at the Bears game on Sunday. And I was sitting in one of the sections that is not known for the quietness. And everybody's there, and I'm wearing my baseball hat, and and we're drinking beer. And there's some people next to me, certainly Goyim. And going back and forth, we start talking. He says, what's your name? This gentleman had a name that was very Jewish sounding. He looks at me and goes, you're a Jew, aren't you? The guy got all nervous. He says, yes, I'm Jewish. He goes, you're Jewish. Do you know Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik? He's at a Bears game. He says, yeah, it's unbelievable. I actually do know Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. I'm actually Orthodox. He says, I'm sure you heard the terrible news. He says to this fat 300-pound guy, Rabbi Soloveitchik, unfortunately, is no longer with us. He drops his beer. If I go, him, that's a big zah. He drops his beer. He picks up his cell phone. He calls his wife. And he says to his wife, Rabbi Soloveitchik passed away. I'm coming home right now. He left the game in the middle. See, before he left, how did you know Rabbi Soloveitchik? He said, my wife works for American Airlines. She was a stewardess. She and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik were very close. She would attend to all of his needs because he treated her like with such respect. He knew that she wasn't Jewish, but every time with the thank yous and asking how you're doing, you know, the story that was told to Rav Aaron when Rav Aaron was in the hospital, the many times he was in the hospital. One very, very religious guy went to him and she said, oh, Rabbi, today is my holiday. It's Good Friday. Can you wish me a Good Friday? He says, I will not only wish you a Good Friday, but a good Sunday, a good Monday, a good Tuesday. He didn't want to say Good Friday. One time Rav Aaron came this year, an hour and a half late. Finally came in. He said, Rebbe, what happened? The person that drove me. He was anti-Semite, he was this and that. He goes, I was so mad at him, he took me around for an hour, I only gave him a $10 tip. He said, Rebbe, here in New York, you don't give a person a tip. He says, you don't understand. He says, see what I have on my face, it's called a beard. See what I'm wearing, it's a black hat. Unfortunately, they know that I'm Jewish. I'm not going to give a tip. This driver is anti-Semite, I'm going to make him more anti-Semitic now. This is some of the godless from Rav Aaron. Clearly, as we said before, I don't have to talk about his bakiyas. His bakiyas was unbelievable. He knew everything that was going on. He used to, at night, his shamash would tell me that at night he used to recite the Morris. And in the middle of the night, he would call his shamash, and he would say, Menachas, Peiches, look up the Tosfos, I think I have it wrong. That's some of the things that he would do. I remember once when he was writing, he wrote Svarim on the Rambam, he left his entire, he would handwrite it, he left it there. In Chicago, and it was for printing, and they had to look at it. He says, no problem. He rewrote the entire hundreds of pages in a few hours. This was the godless. I just want to end off with something that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said about Rav Aaron. He wrote this a number of years ago in Jewish Action. He said as follows. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said that his primary Rebbeim in his life was with Yitzhak Huttner, the Rav, and Rav Aaron Salvation. And he said that Rav Aaron, I learned much, but above all, he served as a role model. Rav Aaron, while an inspiring vision, yet somehow seemed within his reach to truly present a model. It wasn't so much what he said or did. He was simply, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was simply enthralled by what he saw. A remarkable fusion, mastery of simplicity, of vigor and humility, and above all, a pillar of radical integrity. To the extent that he could not, beyond what he knew or could possibly imagine. This is truly what Rav Aaron was. And through the years going on, I feel myself, this is really the loss that we had, is that I feel that there's people in this generation that aren't the same. No party lines, we said before. He didn't care. What it was. And if you did disagree with him in this, disagree with that, it didn't matter. You see, by so many of the Gedolim, when Rav Aaron was Nifter, they all, in Chaim Berlin, they had something. By Rav Moshe's Yeshiva, they had something. They knew what Rav Aaron was. Rav Aaron stood for Torah. And the two points that I want to bring across is this idea of Kiddush Hashem, which was so important, but everybody has a unique role in their life. You don't have to be a Rebbe, you don't have to be a Malamed to have this unique role. You have to be Mekadosh Shem Hashem in the way that you should be. And your work could be learning Torah too. It's done in the proper way. I hope that his neshama on this night of the Yishpizun of Aaron, Rav Aaron ben Rav Moshe, Shein Nishmashot Sur B'Surah Chaim, and that he should be made with Yosha for us, and hopefully we'll bring Mashiach to Cain and Behari Yomeinu. Thank you very much.
Take the wedding story.